Hello again, Mike O'Connor, another GeezerCast for you. This is in the How I Earn My Money theme. And it dawned on me that I should talk sometime about all the companies that I've tried to start that didn't pan out. So this is all the duds this time. Because I have had a couple that have worked out pretty well, and over the course of the next few months, I'll probably tell you about them. But whenever you ask an entrepreneur how they made their money, a lot of them will tell you what I did, which is, well, you try lots of times, and most of the time they don't work. And then the ones that do make up for it. So anyway, I thought I'd tell you about the ones that didn't work this time. And, you know, the very first one was, oh, so long ago. It was back in the early 80s, and I decided that I was this hot rod consultant for a big six firm back then. And so I thought I was pretty smart, so I thought I would start a franchise business because I was pretty keen on the idea of printing and the internet. Well, it was pre-internet. I guess it was sort of the new desktop publishing stuff. And I hooked up with a local guy in the Twin Cities. I was trying to remember his name. It's been so long I've forgotten his name, but he took $10,000 of my dollars and turned it into nothing. Took about 3 months for that to happen. So that was my first flop. And then, I kind of kept my head down for a while and had a big success with GoFast.net, the internet provider that Ralph Jensen and I started in the mid-90s. Then after that, I tried a whole bunch of stuff. There was the IGBM project that was really inspired by Mike Frazee's observation that when he gets spam from people, he'll often send them an invoice that says, you know, this spam is really wasting a lot of my time, and my minimum charge is 2 hours at, I've forgotten what it was, $150 an hour maybe. So he sends out invoices for $300 to spammers. The thing that was funny was that every once in a while, one of them would pay. And I was going, well, wow. So how many, what's the ratio? How many invoices got paid? And he said, well, you know, like 1 in 10 or 1 in 5, you know, 1 in 8. And I was going, man, you know, bar.com, which I haven't checked recently, but back then was getting tens of thousands of spam messages a day. I was thinking, well, if I harvested all those spam messages and essentially automatically replied saying, thank you very much for your spam, this constitutes the beginning of a contract, and this one's free, but the next one, you know, we're going to charge you $2 to process or $10 to process or, you know, some small amount of money like that. And then I would automatically send PayPal click buttons that people could pay for their spam. I thought I'd be able to, you know, 10% of 10,000 messages a day, that's a bunch of money. And so for fun, four of us got together and started, you know, cranking out code and all kinds of stuff like that. And I actually wrote a pretty cool system that would do all that. And it wasn't until I got to the point of actually checking where people were coming from that I realized that a lot of people who send spam are from the mafia, and that if I started sending people from the mafia invoices, I might wind up dead. And so I chickened out on that one. But we got pretty far down the road. I think we spent 2 or 3 months fiddling with that. Ralph and I started one called Vox New. And basically, if you know what Vonage is, Vox New did exactly the same thing. Ralph figured out how to do what Vonage knows how to do, which is to get a telephone call past your firewall. And with pretty cheap equipment, it was the same kind of equipment that Vonage used at that time. And, we again got pretty far down the road. And just as we were about to roll out, Vonage came to town, undercut our rates like by 40% or something like that. And they already had, you know, a whole bunch of cities, and they had much better long distance rates than we did because they were already up the curve on, you know, aggregating minutes. That's what the long distance business is all about, is getting lots of minutes. And they clobbered us on rates. And so, again, we sort of bailed out before we even got started on that one. Another one I started was something called Whip It. I always wanted to use the Devo song Whip It Good as our theme song, but Whip It was going to go out and basically be a contractor that would put together high-speed internet across a cable company. This was pre-Comcast and Roadrunner and all those folks really knowing how to do this stuff, and there was quite a market for sort of teaching people how and maybe selling them the gear and doing all the subcontracting and stuff like that. That was another one that we got pretty far into before we realized that the big kids were just going to figure out how to do it on their own, and so we tiptoed away from it. And then there was television.com. Television.com is a domain that I had. I got kind of famous in the mid-90s for turning down an offer of $50,000 for that. And I held out for a lot more. But then when I got a lot more, I took it all in company stock instead of cash and stock. And television.com was going to go, this was in the late 90s, television.com was going to be the portal for all things television. And I took Magic Beans, kind of in the Jack and the Beanstalk style, instead of cash. So I'm still the proud owner of television.com LLC stock, but I don't think it's going to amount to a whole hill of beans. And in a way, the sequel to GoFast.net was the same sort of thing. Tom Kiefer is a local guy here in town who's real smart about technology companies, and he bought our company from us, and we took cash and stock. And again, it was the same sort of thing. We thought we were going to be rich, you know. We thought the cash was stupid and the stock was what was going to make us all rich. And Tom wound up taking on the order of $50 million of other people's money and plowing it into our company and turning it from a $3 million a year company into about a $9 million a year company. You sort of go, well, wait a minute, that's a lot of money. And it didn't make it a whole lot bigger. And somewhere in the middle of all that, I got what's called a reverse stock split. You've heard of stock splits where the stock has gotten so high that people can't afford to buy it, so they split it so that it's half the price. Well, this is the other direction. And it means that the stock price had gotten so low that it was ludicrous, and so they did a reverse stock split to raise the stock price. And the reverse stock split was 35 to 1, which meant if my stock had been worth a penny, they took 35 of those one penny shares and they rolled it together into a massive 35 cent share. And so I was talking to the guy that was the CFO for that company at that time and said, well, that basically means my stocks are my stock is worthless, right? And he said, well, yeah, if you round up. So that was sort of the end of that one. And there's more, you know. It's the thing about being sort of a small entrepreneurial guy is that you try a lot of stuff. And you keep trying, and most of them don't work, but every once in a while one does, like GoFast, and makes you a whole bunch of money and makes you look really smart when, in fact, you're just persistent. So I think the moral to this story is try again, you know. If you want to be a self-employed entrepreneurial type person, you can't let one setback knock you down, because one setback, everybody has at least one. And, you know, you need three or four per success, I think, just to make things work out. This business of serial entrepreneurs where they go from success to success, well, they're not telling you the whole story. There's some flops in there, too. So anyway, that's the story of businesses that I started that didn't pan out in this geezer cast. For those of you, my unborn grandchildren, I hope you'll try and try again. And there's some descriptions of some flops for you so you don't feel so lonely. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this one, and I'll see you the next time.